Item number five.
From the Interim Director, Department of Health and Human Services, submitting an informational report regarding a crisis bed analysis to determine the number of crisis beds needed in Milwaukee County to alleviate strain on the Psychiatric Crisis Services at Mission Center in the Behavioral Health Division. This is a quarterly report, informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Good morning. Welcome, Mr. Klubczak.
Good morning. Okay. This is the latest report regarding the crisis bed analysis that we've conducted over the course of 2011. Prior reports, we looked at the impact on recidivism, specifically for individuals utilizing the Crisis Resource Center facility. And we found that there was a 40% reduction in PCS usage, 39% reduction in inpatient admissions, and a 46% reduction in inpatient bed days. For 100 individuals that utilize the service, this would be the 6 months post referral to the Crisis Resource Center. We compared the 6 months post referral to the 6 months prior to utilizing the Crisis Resource Center facility. There was also a 35% reduction in the total number of emergency detentions for those same 100 patients 6 months prior or 6 months post CRC referral. The Crisis Resource Center continues to operate at capacity at about 40% of the time. As of September of 2011, there was about 176 patients that were not able to be accepted that were determined to be appropriate only, but they were not accepted due to capacity issues. So one of the primary issues when we look at the Crisis Resource Center is one of sustainability. And BHD provides approximately $200,000 per year in funding for the Crisis Resource Center. The current Crisis Resource Center is co-located with a crisis respite facility, which Milwaukee County fully funds that crisis respite facility and funds the clinical staff that's there to operate the crisis respite facility. And sometimes that's confusing for folks is there's actually two separate programs that are co-located within the one Crisis Resource Center facility. One is a respite house, and the other is a crisis resource, the Crisis Resource Center proper. The respite house is 8 beds. The Crisis Resource Center has a cap of 7. Approximately 50% of the folks that are using the Crisis Resource Centers have a Medicaid HMO. So this is important when we look at the sustainability of that program. Currently, the TLS is in, and myself has been in contact with the state early on when looking at having the Crisis Resource Center or the Crisis Respite House be a recognized level of care that's reimbursable at the HMO level and allows the HMO to get the what's called encounter data. So they get encounter data that contributes to their bottom line. The HMOs can't claim these services. They can't claim the patients getting CRC or respite services as encounter data. My understanding is that recently there has been some very positive developments in that regard. We had a meeting with the state Medicaid director who came a couple weeks ago to Milwaukee County and expressed our concern, and he expressed his commitment to making this a reality, hopefully in 2011, mm-hmm. is that my understanding? Mm-hmm.
Late 2011, we hear this is, I think it's late 2011, early 2012. So that will mean that it will be much more viable and sustainable by having an additional funding stream mm-hmm. For the crisis respite service.
And I would venture without that, it's really a non-starter. Unless you know there's some other avenues of funding that can be identified for a crisis resource center without state aids, it would be very difficult to make that program viable. With it, it's an absolute possibility. So I think it's really that important.
I've got Supervisor Lipscomb and then Rice.
Thank you. So help me reconcile that.
Okay,
that.
You got it.
What's that?
We got a lot of that going around today. It must be the rain.
Help me, thank you. Help me reconcile that with the budget. That,
sure.
Because embedded in the $3 million is $1.4 million for the two new crisis intervention programs on the north side. Some further money on respite, but using this issue of the not knowing whether the model has a sustainable future and the dependence what I thought I just heard was you saying that only with the state, with a change from the state, could you see that sustainable. But yet that doesn't seem to correspond with what I read in the budget in terms of where we think we're going. So is it that we are so confident that change is going to happen that we're planning to proceed as the budget outlines, or just help me?
I think both are actually true. I think we're very confident that will be a change which will allow them to be able to bill Medicaid for that service and will make it sustainable on the long-range basis. The budget certainly does cover the expenses to operate one program so that without that revenue, the budgeted dollars would be able to support a crisis resource center. Without having that, this will make it an ability to expand and then allow them to have some other revenue. The current crisis resource that's available had some additional funding from the county and some other private dollars. Those private grant dollars have diminished over time, which has made it not real sustainable. So really what's kind of holding it together are the dollars from that particular agency that they're putting in and the county dollars. And without a budget like what's in the 2012 budget, it would not be able to be sustainable. So over time, I mean, the HSRI report really talked about having several. It will mean that if we decided to expand in that area, there would be a funding stream, and you would not need the kind of upfront dollars that the county is recommending to put in for 212 right now. So we may be able to see by the end of 212 that there'll be some additional revenue we could bring there, and you know, we could look at the amount of investment that the county has and look at, you know, also providing some broader flexibility for some other types of services.
So in 12, if the state change is made, we could scale back the use of levy for that. If not, then that commitment would have to be maintained until such.
Yeah, I think we'd really have to look at how the state lays it out, but I think there's possibility. But it doesn't mean that there aren't other needs in the mental health area for that money, because I think the budget had some language that talked about, as we look at the resource center, but some flexibility to use those dollars in other areas. But I think that certainly as more Medicaid dollars come in, you know, that could look at using those dollars in other ways to support the mental health system. We'll have to see. I think it's a very positive move that they're going to be allowing HMOs to be able to bill.
Okay. So, I mean, I think we all recognize this, if we make this shift in care, that there needs to be an investment. But it's difficult, at least for me, to follow all of what is embedded in that $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
And the extent to which it affects each of these different components.
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of, it's kind of broken out in the budget.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
It's still very difficult for me. I don't know, perhaps others have a better grasp of it. But I would appreciate that as we proceed that, assuming that we proceed, that there be a continued
update.
Sort of report back
mm-hmm.
on to what extent we've had success in this and how we have sort of,
okay.
How you are changing your what adjustments you're making So. Embedded within that, then?
Is that a motion, Supervisor Lipscomb?
Well, it's a request, I guess. It's a request of you as the chair and them as the department that they would make sure that they keep us updated on that. I think. And then one further question. So within the 1.4 for the two new North Side crisis intervention programs, embedded within that is the capital costs. So it's assumed that we're contracting with somebody and that the building or whatever, they're financing all that, and it's within the service costs that we're, the contracts that we're paying for them.
I think that that's yet to be determined. We have to really look at that. But the way that it's identified in the budget, it is just the operational program costs. You're right. We still need to work with the provider in terms of getting a building, you know, making sure that there are costs for that. But it's our understanding that when the exec put that in, that that's really the operational cost. And we probably would do an RFP, as we've done on other things, and you know, whoever became the partner would work with us around that development for the building, and we would bring the dollars for operation of the program.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you, Supervisor Lipscomb. Supervisor Rice.
Thank you. Thanks for the report. I think it's instructive in terms of the progress that's being made, but I wonder, is there I look at the impact on recidivism, and the numbers are impressive, but can we quantify that and translate these percentages into dollars? I think that would be instructive, not only in terms of the current, you know, 200,000, but also going forward,
sure.
You know, what can we expect to realize in terms of savings, and that I think would help guide some of our policymaking decisions on formulating delivery service models. So, for example, a 40% reduction in PCS usage or inpatient admission reduction of nearly 40%, can we put a dollar amount on that?
What we could do is put a dollar amount on the cost of care, but I would not be able to say that cost of care translates specifically into cost savings. We look at the cost of care in an inpatient as an inpatient compared to the cost of care for the crisis resource center.
Right.
That's an easily identifiable cost amount. You know, you're looking at about an $800 a day differential in terms of the cost of care for the crisis resource center versus the cost of care for an inpatient that day. That kind of data I could easily provide. If that's what you're looking for.
Well, I sense some reticence in not being able to quantify this properly. I mean, that number, it seems to me, intuitively would make sense, but is there other things here that I'm not, you know, aware of that would somehow shade that data? Because, you know, again, it seems to me that's from a common sense, logical standpoint, seems to be the number that we would realize in terms of savings.
Supervisor West, Mr. President. I think the real issue is the size, so that the 15 beds does not get us to the point yet where we can then say, okay, we can close a unit.
Right.
You know, so the savings is not quite. We can save that cost for that patient.
Yeah.
But we can't. We're not quite at the point where it's scalable enough that it makes an impact on our overall. We can't close a bed. We can't say we can decrease a nurse at PCS. So once we could get to a bigger scale, which is part of our investment plan, then we can begin to look at how those savings translate.
Yeah. Is there any reason why this data, which is kind of on a micro level on these individuals, wouldn't translate going forward as you scale it up?
They won't, as we scale up, yes.
As we scale it up, I firmly believe that will happen, but I can't guarantee that you know, this is what you're picking up on my reticence, is I can't say that there's going to be an $800 per day levy savings. I wouldn't be able to make that kind of a leap, but we could, if we kept it in the cost of care realm, absolutely, that's something that we can deliver.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We could do that. One of our, going back to the previous issue, really the things that we're really trying to work on is really the front door and the back door. So as we look at, can we decrease people that come to us from through other crisis and diversion services, and secondly, what can we do about people coming back in terms of recidivism? So that we're trying to look at both of those areas. We look at both of those areas,
there's no doubt that we will be able to decrease our beds and have real debt budget savings.
And your comment prompts another another question, that is on that front door issue. Are we getting, or do we have good communication and cooperation from area police departments in terms of diversion of these folks to the right places?
That, you know, that is an area that has continual ongoing discussion. Because I think that the commitment is there from the law enforcement agencies. How it happens that day from that police officer is a staff development issue. We continue to do education. We continue to work with them. And I think if we offer greater opportunities for them, you know, now we have one place. They got to remember that one place, and it's on the south side. I think as we spread it, we'll be able to, again, get better cooperation.
In a prior report, one of the investigating tools that we used was a law enforcement survey. Looking specifically, we asked very specific questions. Do you use the Crisis Resource Center? If so, thank you. And if not, why? And some of the why nots are proximity, where it's located. They didn't know about it. Mm-hmm. They didn't see it as a viable alternative because when they had wanted to use it in prior occasions, it was full. When you're told no once, when you're told no twice, it's no longer a viable opportunity for you. So then you go to the next level. You bring them to PCS or something else.
But it's also volunteer.
It's also voluntary, right? Mm-hmm. So we are really kind of trying to focus on voluntary alternatives to emergency detention. This is seen as a voluntary alternative to emergency detention, but it also has to be a program that fits for them, that fits for law enforcement.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Again, that leads one to think that you know that the more geographical diverse and higher volume of feds, the more utilization it will be.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That's certainly our belief, and I think the data supports that. But again, it's a small sample. We're talking about 100 patients. It's a relatively small sample.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Any further? All right, item number 7.